Il-program li ser tisimaw u għamidġjub li l-kombixxu għatajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me today in the studio on University Matters, Professor Joseph Cacciottolo and Dr. Claire Vassallo. And they're going to be here to talk about a joint initiative of their two disciplines, medicine and on Claire's side, she's in translation and in semiotics and on various other humanistic things. I'd like to just run briefly through their bios because I think it's important, particularly on this occasion, to see where the two people are coming from a discipline point of view. Professor Cacciottolo has been teaching clinical medicine at the University of Malta since 1984. He's the current head of the Department of Medicine at the Medical School and coordinator for Humanities and Medical Science Program, which is what we're going to be speaking about. After qualifying in medicine, he underwent postgraduate training in respiratory medicine in England and trained in cardiovascular epidemiology at the University of Dundee, Scotland, and Kuopio, Finland, I hope I pronounced that correctly, from where he was awarded a DSc degree. He was elected MRCP in 1980. This was followed by FRCP, FCCP, and FRCPE in 2010. Alongside his international activities as World Health Organization Fellow and International Fellow of the American Association for Respiratory Care, he was involved in the formulation of national clinical practice guidelines for the management of several respiratory disorders, supplementary oxygen therapy, and hypertension. At the University of Malta, he's a member of the Program Validation Committee and of the Honoris Causa Fellowships and Honours Committee, and is involved in various aspects of medical education, addressing teaching, assessment processes, quality assurance issue in European medical schools. And he currently supervises four postgraduate students at the Faculty of Medicine and Surgery. Dr. Claire Vassallo graduated from the University of Malta with a BAJ and went on to do BA honours in English with linguistics. She pursued her studies in the interface between disciplines, between areas at the Istituto di Comunicazione Università degli Studi di Bologna in Italy, where she obtained her doctorate in semiotics and, I might say, the tutorship of no less Professor Umberto Eco. She is currently senior lecturer in English and Translation Studies here at the university and teaches courses in feminist literary theory, gender and power, multilingualism and multiculturalism and translation theory, among others. Dr. Vassallo has published various papers in her areas of interest, which include post-colonial theory, genre theory and feminist critical theory, and has co-edited a number of books. Her latest interest is sci-fi as a branch of literary studies from a feminist perspective, and we hope to hear more about that. Dr. Vassallo is also a member of the University Faculty of Arts Committee for MA Matters and a member of the Committee on Bilingualism in School in Malta. She's a former chairman of the PBS and a board member of the English-speaking Union. Her interest in crossing the borders between sciences and the arts has led her to her involvement in HUMS, about which we shall be speaking. A warm welcome to you both. I apologise for the very potted version and reductive versions of your bios, but as I say, I thought it was important to mention where you are really coming from, because that's really the whole point of what we're going to be speaking about today. HUMS is an acronym for Humanities and Medical Science Programme. So perhaps we can start off with a very basic question. What is it, this programme? Professor Cacciottolo.
Well, it explores an intersection. For very many years, people were isolated in their own shells. But this explores the interface between the different shells, different areas of studies, different disciplines. And it explores the intersections between human experience, which is addressed by the humanities, but also medical practice and science and technology. Increasingly now, medical practice is relying more and more on science and technology. And medical humanities would explore this interface. I must say that this is a very new academic discipline in many universities. So really, although we're not groundbreaking, but we're certainly one of the early European universities which are adopting a program in medical humanities. We're in many countries now, in many states in the US, now they have faculties of or institutes of medical humanities. It's arrived at that level.
There seems to have been in history a very close connection between medicine and the humanities. If we go back to the Greeks, you mention in on your website here the 12th century Jewish sage who was a physician and theologian. And then obviously there was this long period, or perhaps in more recent history, where the two disciplines were completely separate. Now, are we coming together again in a certain way?
I think so. We mentioned Moses Maimonides, who was a Jewish sage, and he was a physician, he was a theologian, and he was a master of many, many arts. But certainly the impact, I mean, you can look at medicine and the humanities and history from two ways, really. One, the impact of medicine on history. And the history of medicine, for example, the impact, the history of medicine is fascinating. How ideas developed, how from dogma and from medicine theology, medicine superstition came out of the mists. Hippocrates comes to mind, but then of course in the Enlightenment, Descartes, although not a physician, Descartes, but certainly he influenced medicine. Very much so, because he introduced scientific method into medicine. So that's one interface. But also, what's fascinating to look at how medicine and illness affected art and affected history. For example, how it affected art. Monet, one of the Impressionist painters, had cataracts, and his late paintings are different, and he knew they were different because his perception of light, his perception of greens, and his perception of blues were affected by his cataracts. So when you see his early paintings, his late paintings, obviously he was aware that they were being painted by somebody with, but also history, medicine has affected areas in history we're just discussing. For example, Battle of Waterloo. I mean, people say that it was lost because of a medical issue. Not upon Napoleon. Napoleon had hemorrhoids.
What was he?
He was quite ill on the day. And his surgeon, Larrey, who used to dose him with opium for the pain, you know, it must have clouded the way he thought. I mean, we can't say that Waterloo was lost because of this, because there were many other issues, you know, Marshal Ney and the late deployment of... But certainly there was a medical impact. There was a medical issue to Waterloo. The Suez Canal crisis was another one, for example. Anthony Eden had biliary problems, gallbladder problems. He was operated on 3 or 4 occasions, a botched-up job initially by his surgeon. They had to call a surgeon from the States to sort things out, but he was in great pain. And it is said that he deployed the troops too late in the Suez Canal, and Britain lost the Suez Canal because of a poor decision by Anthony Eden, because he was clouded by painkillers and by antidepressants that he was taking. So really, there are fascinating issues.
How does the humanities then fit in with this, in this medical program? I mean, we've spoken about medical things affecting historical events, but medicine in literary medicine?
Well, it's the human dimension. It's one of those areas that, in a sense, has always been of overlapping interest, in that issues of illness, of issues affecting the human condition, are very much the basic themes of literature and art and philosophy and theatre. I don't think that necessarily writers or critics look at the medical detail, but the way it affects the human person, the sense of the condition of humanity. That is very much a theme central to literature, to art. So literary works looking at the human, at the person and his suffering, or then you have interest from areas like sociology or history of ideas. People like Michel Foucault, precisely, who looked at the history of institutions and the way they change in the modern age, the way the human is at the center for much of modern history and slowly is pushed out of the center in more contemporary times, the sort of post-humanism, if you consider humanism as a model from the Renaissance to just recently, according to people like Foucault and others, this period is considered sort of post-humanist in that certain other things like structures of thought have taken the place of man. If you look at history, history is about putting man at the center. But structuralism, other ways of thinking have shown us, for instance, as a child inherits language, you inherit a structure, a system of thinking that pre-exists you. So in a sense, the structures are really at the center, not the human.
And why this program here at the university? Is this something, is this a message that you want to put across to the students?
As Professor Kachatlo has just said, it is something that's happening in universities across Europe and across the world, but not everywhere. A few years ago, there was an ACUME project, which is one of these European thematic networks that worked on the interface between science, literature and the humanities. I was involved in that, and at the time that I just got involved in this project, we had a medical doctor, Victor Grech, a professor of pediatric cardiology, who approached the Department of English, where I also teach, with a project to work on science fiction, medicine in science fiction, which was a really broad title to start off with. And we took it on. We could have said no, which doesn't quite fit our areas, but we said yes, let's do it. So Professor Van Kaloos and I supervised his work for 7 years, because he did it as a part-time. Can imagine, he's quite a busy man.
In fact, he should have been with us today. We exactly. couldn't fit, yes. fit around his schedule.
Mm. But he plays a very big role in how this this program comes about, Ham. So he worked for 7 years.
More a catalyst, because catalyst, you know, he changed things, but he was a bridge more than anything. Mm. Because the many times that the few of us at the medical school would just sit around a cup of coffee and chat and all sorts of things, but mainly art issues and medical and art issues. And it was a natural progression for us. The three of us from the medical school, Charles Savoia-Ventura, and was a prof of obstetrics and gynecology, and Victor Grech, obviously. And we would discuss things over coffee, and then Victor was the ideal bridge that
got the two sides talking to each other.
Because he helped us, Ivan and I, to look at this area from a different point of view. You know, we started, at first we were a little skeptical, and we had to work a lot on a different way of writing, a different way of reading. We use language, we write in very different styles, in the medical people and us. That's another interesting area to look at. It's a different way of thinking,
absolutely.
Of writing, of compiling information. And so we got him to change his style, and we worked on all sorts of issues. And we got more and more drawn into this field. The minute he finished his PhD earlier this academic year in November, I think not a week went by before he came out
We had been planning.
Where we didn't know.
But I mean, we would say it would be ideal with a forum. I think at first, it started gelling by, why don't we have a forum where we can talk about matters of mutual interest? But we would bring our own experiences, and you would bring your experiences. And then it gradually, gradually developed until we talked and talked, and I think we found a modus operandi, mm-hmm. which is quite, as a start, really.
There have been some notable medics, Maltese medics, who have been extremely interested in things other than medicine. Obviously, Sir Temis Ammi comes to mind, Joseph G. Baldacchino, yes, who was head of the museum's department for some time. I can think of many, several medics who are musicians. My brother-in-law is an MD and a very accomplished cellist. He's interested in philosophy. I'm sure there are a lot of medics here in Malta who do have this second life, but perhaps they don't sort of talk about it very much, except perhaps in the coffee room with you.
Absolutely. For a variety of reasons, people are very shy to discuss this issue, and also it's the time factor that you know, as a medic, one can't dedicate enough time to become professional at what one does. If one plays the cello or plays the piano, obviously, you know, it will probably have to say, take second fiddle, if I might say, to your medical studies. And this has been a tragedy, in a sense, with many doctors who are accomplished pianists. But then, you know, they have to decide, because if you take the higher grades, I understand, you have to practice very, very often. And it can't dovetail it neatly. So that's one issue. But also now the requirements of medical studies and the requirements of postgraduate studies, you know, leave you very, very, very little time to.
And how do you feel that this, as a program here at university, could help these students who are starting off their medical studies, who are going to be pushed into this rather very time-consuming profession? Do you think this program can help them?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. Perhaps Claire can.
Yeah, we see this program as partly we want to create opportunities for teaching and working with students. So perhaps first-year medical students, yeah, ideally would get them early, because there's a tendency in medical training to start to see anything that isn't directly linked to an exam or to a function as irrelevant. So perhaps getting them early, following from systems of knowledge at sixth form perhaps, and building on that sort of principle, it could help open their minds. In the past, we were saying how a lot of medical students would first take an exam in philosophy. Now, that doesn't happen anymore.
No.
And this is, in a sense, what philosophy is about. This is history of ideas. This is linking thinking that is only apparently separate. But in fact, you know, the human condition is about the body. It's about the mind, the emotions, prejudices, language. So perhaps if we went in early
I'm
enough.
I'm glad you brought this up, because many medical schools are realizing that the study of medicine and the practice of medicine can be dehumanizing on the operator. It can be gradually dehumanizing on a medical student and progressively dehumanizing on a doctor. There are very, you know, the studies showing this, but I mean, people call it euphemistically clinical detachment and defensive medicine. But that negates empathy. And many medical schools are realizing that this is a neglected part in medical training. And I think that could be addressed. Now, medical schools are starting to address this, to have a better insight into the human condition, apart from physics, chemistry, and biology.
I think that the idea of having this wider picture, a medical student that has a broader sort of view on things is important. But there are also some very practical issues that could be addressed through making this connection between language and medicine, particularly from your point of view, because you're interested very much in the language side of it. Things like we have this bilingual country, doctors are dealing with bilingualism every day of their lives from morning till night. And maybe there can be some interesting studies, but not just for the sake of doing the studies, but also perhaps for helping these students.
We live in a very particular situation between languages. We function in more than one language, usually up to three, maybe using Italian very passively, but it's still there, can still function. So we work between languages, and doctors, and not only doctors, this really goes across the board in all different departments. Our textbooks are written in English, and the national language, not just official national language, but people with Maltese as a first language are over 90% of the population. So all of these people are studying their subjects, their specialist subjects, in English and thinking in Maltese. Now, when it comes to doctors, and communication is a big theme in doctor training, you have doctors who have to communicate with the patient in Maltese, understand the terms and the names maybe for different body parts or different symptoms in Maltese, while taking notes in a sort of medical style in English simultaneously. That's interesting. It's interesting what's happening in the brain in terms of, you know, language use and simultaneous translation. But also, for instance, our first HUMS publication is on terminology. We have an interesting glossary that's been put together by the secretary of the Department of Gynecology and Obstetrics, Elizabeth Kassar, on names of terms to do with obstetrics and gynecology in Maltese and in English. Around this, we've built an interest, I think a very insightful book on the history of dictionaries, on the linguistic issues in Malta, the language question that, you know, takes us back historically. And we've built a nice piece of work around this glossary, which should be published shortly. And that should be our first HUMS publication. So that could be of practical use to doctors, while interesting from an academic perspective for the arts and language people.
There's another issue that I'd like to mention, and I mention it because I know of Claire's interest in feminism. Something actually that's very practical is a research issue that could eventually give advice to whoever runs health services. The increasing feminization of the medical profession. This has happened in other countries, though it has specific issues and has specific imports and impacts on the health service. And it can only be addressed by people who have a leg, that's, you know, legs that straddle different disciplines. I wonder what Claire would have to say about this. Well, perhaps feminization in the educational profession could be slightly similar, but again
it's happening across the board. I mean, you look at university, there are more women students than men students, and that's in all the professions now, lawyers, doctors, architects. I think that's pretty much across the board. So there's a feminization of society, and of course a feminization of the medical profession follows. Women tend to choose different, there are women in all areas in medicine, in all the specializations. But a lot of them choose to be GPs. And there's also an increasing number of women in obstetrics and gynecology, which is, you know, which was a female-dominated area anyway, before medicine made it more medical than perhaps social. And Foucault had a lot to say about this, for instance, history of institutions. Mm-hmm. And I think women are claiming that back. Pediatrics, perhaps.
Increasing the surgeons,
and also because of working hours. Surgeons don't do many outpatient clinics, they don't do pharmacies. Yeah. That works with your home life.
And the issues of opting out of the profession for a few years, I think that needs to be addressed at a professional level, but more from a humanistic social science point
of
view.
Well, in Scandinavia, the way they dealt with this was by making both men and women opt out, not even opt out, have to get out. If you have a child, a woman takes a year, the mother takes a year, the father takes a year. So it's not that women fall back in their professions, it's that everybody, if you choose to have children, has to take a step back for about a year. It shouldn't just be women, because both genders have children and careers.
Well, we could have a whole program about that.
But is it making medicine more human? Because it brings in certain, you know, different skills, different attitudes.
I'm not convinced. No. I think women can be as crude as any man.
You don't have any illusions about us. We're coming to the end, unfortunately, of our time. I wanted to mention the website, which has just gone up, and it can be found at www.um.edu.mt/program/HUMS. And there, at the moment, you'll find the sort of the raison d'être for this program. You'll also find an abstract list and the actual abstracts from the first joint meeting, which you had in January. And there are some absolutely amazing titles here. I think that one would have been yours, Professor, The Face, An Overlap of Science and Art. I mean, I love that idea, and I love the abstract. There's various others, Languages and Evolution, The Family Tree and Historical Stratification, and many others. So I really recommend people to go and look at that website and keep looking at it, because it sounds as though you're going to have lots more interesting activities coming up, including this publication. Well, thank you very, very much, Professor Joseph Cacciottolo and Dr. Claire Bassallo, for being with us today on University Matters to talk about HUMS. Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqat tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.